From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Donald Trump's supporters heckled CNN's White House correspondent Jim Acosta at a rally in Tampa, Florida last Tuesday, chanting, "CNN sucks," as well as "traitor" and "you're a liar." The rally attendees were channeling their president, who has repeatedly pushed violent rhetoric against media outlets like CNN. The next day, Trump retweeted his son Eric's post of a video of the heckling. A CNN reporter on Wednesday then asked White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders whether the Trump administration condoned Acosta's treatment by Trump supporters. Ms. Sanders said the president does not condone violence against journalists, but qualified her statement, saying the press needs to act responsibly. Then on Thursday, at his Pennsylvania rally, Trump continued to attack the media. He spoke at length about how the media covered his trip to England, where he was late to visit the Queen, and then called the press fake, disgusting news. My guest is John Langford, a clinical lecturer in law and Abrams Clinical Fellow and Associate Research Scholar at the Media Freedom and Information Access Clinic at Abrams Institute, Yale Law School. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So first, this is nothing new, right? Trump's treatment of the media even goes all the way back to when he was campaigning for president, where he began labeling the press fake news. So this is something he's been building on for now a couple of years, right?
Correct. Yeah. No, this really took off during the election when he required reporters who were covering his campaign to stand in a press pen, when he encouraged the audience to jeer at them, when he began using the term fake news. It's escalated since the election. About a month after the election is when he first used the term enemy of the people, categorizing the press as this other entity that is not operating in the public's interest. But this is a long-running and very troubling trend and habit of the president.
And then on Twitter, he has echoed all of those statements and sentiments continually. If you look back, there's a lengthy list of tweets where he continuously has referred to various individual outlets, specifically as fake news, as well as just in general railed against the media, with the exception, of course, of Fox News, which he routinely praises. Now, he met before the two rallies in Tampa and Pennsylvania. Before that, he had met with the publisher of the New York Times, A.G. Sulzberger, and it was supposed to be a private meeting. Then he tweeted about it, and then the publisher also made a statement. I'm wondering what you make of the fact that he even met with the New York Times publisher to basically discuss this idea that he's labeled the press the enemy of the people. Do you think that his meeting was, the idea that he met was maybe a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think it's actually sort of par for the course for presidents to have somewhat closer relationships with major news outlets and their publishers than people maybe realize. So it's not particularly surprising that he met with the with A.G. Sulzberger. I think that it is notable that the meeting was off the record, and that, notwithstanding the fact that it was initially off the record, the president, as you said, tweeted about it. I think that's a break in decorum. Usually, I think those sorts of meetings would have stayed off the record. But as you know, once the president tweeted about it, A.G. Sulzberger issued a pretty compelling statement describing the harm that President Trump is doing by labeling the press as the enemy of the people.
And actually, I want to read Trump's tweet because it's really interesting what he said. He's the one who first exposed that the meeting took place. He said, "I had a very good and interesting meeting at the White House with A.G. Sulzberger, publisher of the New York Times, spent much time talking about the vast amounts of fake news being put out by the media and how that fake news has morphed into phrase, enemy of the people, sad," Trump wrote. Isn't he the one who created and perpetuated that phrase?
He is in contemporary politics. It really can be attributed to President Trump. About a month after the after his inauguration in
Right.
February 2017, he first used the phrase. It's not actually a new phrase. I mean, we have heard "enemy of the people," the press referred to as "enemy of the people" in times past. And certainly there was actually a similar phrase in Germany in the 1930s. But we also see it elsewhere in authoritarian regimes. I think you see similar sort of portrayals of the media in Russia today. So it's not, I mean, certainly it's not unique to President Trump, but the insinuation that it's not a creation of President Trump, at least in our own contemporary American politics, is, it doesn't really pass the red face test.
And in fact, you bring up a very critical issue, which is that when the leadership of a nation attacks the media this relentlessly, this is a pretty standard hallmark of authoritarian regimes, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, one of the thankfully in the United States, we have a rich tradition of the government respecting the institution of the free press. But one of the most dangerous implications, as A.J. Sulzberger highlighted after his meeting with President Trump, from President Trump's labeling of the press as enemy of the people, is actually the safety of journalists overseas that are operating in authoritarian countries. In administrations past, the American reporters operating overseas could be confident that the government would have their back if anything were to go wrong. These days, it's not as clear. And certainly, there's a real concern among members of the media that the Trump administration doesn't have journalists' back, and that makes reporting in authoritarian countries much more difficult.
So essentially, journalists who are on the front lines of, say, the war in Syria or Iraq, in the past, we've seen journalists be kidnapped and even killed. So when they are kidnapped, they can be no longer confident that the government is going to pull all the stops to help rescue them because they've been labeled the enemy of the people themselves. I want to play for you and our audience what CNN's Jim Acosta faced last Tuesday in Tampa, Florida. It's really important, I think, to see the fact that the Trump has generated a mass hysteria among his base. If it was just the president saying these things, it would be one thing, but of course, he influences his base. That's only to be expected. And this was the mob that was chanting CNN sucks. And that's a large mob of Trump supporters at the Tampa, Florida rally on Tuesday chanting CNN sucks as Jim Acosta was attempting to do a stand-up in front of one of the, essentially recording himself at the rally for a news feature. They repeated some people in the audience in Wilkes-Barre in Pennsylvania at a rally on Thursday repeated that chant. John, this looks like a hysterical mob. I fear for the safety of journalists, not just in war zones abroad, but at Trump rallies.
Absolutely. There's an organization that tracks attacks on members of the media. Last year, there were 36 physical assaults on journalists that were reported for the entire year. This year, we're only midway through the year, and there are already 24 physical attacks of journalists. And some of those are obviously not related to the rhetoric that Trump has deployed in referring to the media, but certainly as we approach the midterms and newspapers begin to send their beat reporters out into the country to, follow various campaigns, including the president, as he goes and stumps for various candidates around the country. There is a real concern that the rhetoric and the level of tension between the media and the Trump administration really sort of provides a ripe opportunity for there to be violence and harm towards members of the media. It's troubling.
So those attacks that you just cited, were those all here in the US you're talking about?
Those were here in the U.S.
Wow. And I'm assuming they include the killings of the journalists at the Annapolis newspaper earlier this year by a man who apparently had some long-standing beef with the paper.
Yes.
Wow. It's not clear if that particular perpetrator was encouraged by Trump's rhetoric. Not yet clear anyway. I suppose the trial in that case may reveal that. But times are quite dangerous when the Trump administration says and does these things. And it's the Trump administration, not just Trump. I want to play another video of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's the White House press secretary, of course. And the day after Jim Acosta was heckled at the Trump rally in Tampa, she was asked by a journalist, what the Trump administration's position was and whether they condoned that heckling. Here's what she said.
The president condemns and denounces any group that would incite violence against another individual, and certainly doesn't support groups that would promote that type of behavior. We've been clear about that a number of times since the beginning of the administration. On the second part of your question, the president, as I just said, does not support violence against anyone and or anything, and we've been very clear every single time we've been asked about that. When it comes to the media, the president does think that the media holds a responsibility. We so fully support a free press, but there also comes a high level of responsibility with that. The media routinely reports on classified information.
Nobody was being violent last night. They were trying to prevent a broadcaster from getting his broadcast out and yelling that his network sucks. Is that right or wrong?
I'm sorry. What was the first part of your question?
I said no one was being violent last night in terms of hitting anybody, and no broadcaster was broadcasting state secrets. They were trying to do stand-ups at a public rally, and you had people trying to yell over them, preventing them from doing their jobs, and yelling that their network sucks on live TV.
Look,
does the White House support that or not?
While we certainly support freedom of the press, we also support freedom of speech, and we think that those things go hand in hand.
And that is Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying, while we also support freedom of the press, we support freedom of speech, implying that the rally goers were simply expressing themselves freely. So John Lankford, what do you make of this? The First Amendment obviously supports both a free press and freedom of speech, the public's freedom of speech. Those two things do not have to be in opposition to one another. What do you make of what Sarah Huckabee Sanders said? She essentially qualified her answer. We support the free press, but.
Yeah, I find it to be another example of a very troubling equivocation, sort of equating what the press is doing and what CNN and other media outlets are doing in terms of disseminating the news of a newsworthy event to the public with what could be perceived as credible threats of hostility. And to be clear, the First Amendment does, we have a very robust First Amendment, and as we should, there are lots of good reasons for that. The First Amendment does not protect credible threats of violence to individuals. There are limits to the protections of the First Amendment. And so to the extent that what's happening is that there are individuals that are actually threatening physical violence and that those threats are credible, that's actually not protected conduct under the First Amendment. But more troubling, I mean, that's the real issue here is that with this sort of series of equivocations and this rhetoric that's being rolled out of the White House on a daily basis, primarily through the president's Twitter account, you see the sort of background norms around the respect for the press as an institution, around respect for the press as a source of newsworthy event of information that can be trusted, being denigrated in a way that could do very long-lasting harm to the freedom of the press in this country. Not to mention, obviously, the threats to reporters' physical safety during the next few months in a heated midterm election.
Ivanka Trump, the president's daughter, at an event organized by the media outlet Axios, asked her, they said, there's a lot of people in the press here today. Are we the enemy of the people, as your father has said? And she just sort of pointedly said, no, I don't believe that. What do you make of her answer? She didn't want to elaborate very much, but it seems disingenuous that given that she is, plays a a big role in the White House. She is the president's advisor. If she was just his daughter living her own private life, it wouldn't matter whether she disagreed with the president or not. But she is a White House advisor. She is a government figure. And she says she doesn't believe the press is the enemy of the people, but she didn't defend the press either against her father's attacks.
Right. I mean, I think that Ivanka's own view, which I take that to be representative of her own view, is probably reflected in a lot of people in the administration even. It's just not clearly not reflected in the view of the president. And as you know, the president tweeted shortly thereafter to say Ivanka was correct, that the press is not the enemy of the people. It's really the fake news that is the enemy of the people. But in the bucket of fake news, he puts the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, NBC, I mean, the major mainstream news outlets that the majority of the news-consuming public gets their news from. So it seems to be that there's a divergence between, you know, Ivanka's views and the president's views on whether the press is the enemy of the people. But you're right. I mean, I think to your point about Ivanka not making a more full-throated defense of the press, you know, that's been problematic in a lot of areas in which I think people have turned to Ivanka to be a source of reason and rationality in this administration. And time and again, she sort of offered a sort of half-hearted defense of values and institutions that people care about.
Now, of course, Trump rails against the fake news and accuses them of spreading lies. Meanwhile, the Washington Post has been tracking how many lies come out of his mouth. And just a couple of days ago, the Washington Post updated their list and have now determined that the president made 4,229 false or misleading claims in 558 days as president. This is just incredible. Is this the sort of other side of the coin of the attacks on free press being a hallmark of authoritarian regimes going hand in hand with the actual spreading of propaganda? I mean, basically, you can look at his lies as this phenomenon that's been around for a very long time, which is propaganda.
I would say yes, in my own opinion. I think this is the flip side of the coin. I think, you know, the press, the free press as an institution, is meant in part to counter sort of consolidation of control over the news and information that's important to the public. We have some protections in the case law for the extent to which which government cannot sort of manipulate and choreograph the coverage it receives. So there are sort of doctrinal limits on like the president's ability to exclude individual members from press conferences based on their views or their speech. But in general, you know, the independent press has been more of a norm than a sort of aspect of our sort of legal order. And I think we are running up against the flip side of the coin of these attacks on the media being that Trump wants to control in a very serious way the narrative that his that his supporters receive. You see that at the rallies. I mean, the rallies seem to be full of sort of Trump's own version of events that doesn't usually track up with the sort of mainstream reporting of those events. And so it is, I mean, to me, I think it's a real concern. Consolidation over the news is clearly a move towards a more authoritarian government.
Now, the First Amendment protections that we have enjoyed for many, many years seem to be eroding pretty rapidly under Trump. But what are protections that can be put into place? For example, is there legal recourse based on constitutional protections that news outlets have? There is, for example, a defamation lawsuit against Alex Jones, a Trump supporter, a radio host who is seen by largely Trump's base as somebody who is a member of the media, but generally puts out conspiracy theories that whip up hysteria and a frenzy. He is being sued by the parents of a boy who died in the Sandy Hook mass shooting because he basically claimed that shooting was a giant hoax, a conspiracy. Can news outlets sue the president for defamation?
Well, I mean, it's a complicated question. I think that it's a complicated question for a number of reasons. One is that the case law is complicated on defamation. I think news outlets would be hard pressed to show that that they sort of suffered the type of harm that defamation toward the tort of defamation usually sort of contemplates, which is a sort of more personalized harm, although it can be financial.
I mean, if Jim Acosta was physically assaulted at that rally in Tampa, one wonders, right? What who would he hold who would he hold responsible for attacks?
It's a tough question. The toughest question is causality. The president and his supporters would say that, you know, while he's tough on the media, he certainly hasn't himself physically harmed a journalist. He certainly hasn't, you know, advocated in the most explicit terms that someone hurt Jim Acosta, although obviously the posting of the CNN video was scary, to say the least. There are the sorts of protections that are in place now. There are protections against prosecutions. So one thing we often see are leak investigations and prosecutions, similar leak investigations. In the past, the press has been, in some circumstances, is able to rely on Supreme Court precedent from the 1970s to argue that, at least in some cases, they should have some protections in leak investigations. Though those protections have generally been wrapped into the set of guidelines the DOJ has before a prosecutor can go after a journalist for information. So one place where we might look for erosions of press protections is in leaked investigations and prosecutions. We actually haven't seen a huge uptick in the Trump administration, and in fact, the Obama administration prosecuted more, a lot more leaked prosecutions than all of the administrations before him combined. So that's an area where we were concerned before the inauguration, but we really haven't seen a significant uptick. There are other protections in terms of direct retaliation. And so there's sort of two big stories of retaliation. One is that the president has repeatedly gone after Amazon, because Amazon is obviously owned by Jeff Bezos, who also owns the Washington Post. Trump doesn't like the coverage the Washington Post gives him often. And in response, has seemingly gone after Amazon, and in particular, the shipping rates that the Postal Service provides to Amazon. If you were able to prove that he asked the Postmaster General to increase the rates on Amazon because he didn't like the coverage of the Washington Post, you might actually have a retaliation lawsuit, and that's a very very real protection for the press. But in terms of the physical violence, it's just much harder. And that's, I think, what's so hard about it is that he's really just created an environment where the potential for harm is very ripe, and has said everything except seemingly, you know, go after them on a sort of personal level, go after the reporters.
Right. Finally, John, as a member of the independent media, we often critique the major, especially corporate media from the left. There are many things to critique in the mainstream media. Absolutely. It's not a perfect institution at all. Often the media has enabled power and been far too cozy with power. That aside, if Trump had legitimate grievances with the media, as past presidents have had, you know, because people generally think it's unfair when they get critical coverage, what advice would you give him to go about it in a way that is safe and constitutional?
Well, the most straightforward answer is to use the pulpit, and it's called the bullet pulpit that he has. He has a microphone and a loudspeaker that is louder than any of these news organizations individually. He could stand up and get out Sarah Huckabee's Sanders stand up at a press briefing and counter the narrative that he doesn't like. I mean, the constitutional remedy for speech that you don't like is more speech. It's for the president to get his own message out there, to get his communications team in gear, and to sort of put out his own response to the coverage he's receiving. The answer is not to go after the financial interests of the media. The answer is not to threaten physical harm or to, you know, at least increase the chances that there will be physical harm to journalists. It's not to deny access in a retaliatory manner to press briefings. It's to explain his positions. It's to explain his policies in a way that, on the merits, counters the coverage that they're receiving.
Right. I mean, you could literally just point out something specific that the media did and said, say, well, I disagree with this. This is what they said, but this is what I feel. He could simply do that, or he could literally just act a little bit more presidential and continue to lead with grace. But I think we're way past that. I want to thank you so much for joining us today, John.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
My guest has been John Langford, a clinical lecturer in law at the Abrams Clinical Fellow and Associate Research Scholar at the Media Freedom and Information Access Clinic at Abrams Institute, Yale Law School. We've been discussing Trump's attack on press freedom. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at RU with Sonali.